Welcome. This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And I'm James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com. James, we've been away for a little while, and unfortunately, we return with all of America repeatedly watching a snuff film. While Ferguson, I think, was a complete psyop disaster meant to kind of divide and conquer, I think what's going on in New York right now after the Eric Garner chokehold death might just be a harbinger of what's to come. So with all of that in mind, let's begin with a look at our New World Disorder on this episode 212 of NewWorldNextWeek.com with a story from the FBI where their new report accidentally exposes the severity of the police state. A recently published FBI report accidentally proves that while the police claim cops face growing threats from rowdy populations, like in Ferguson, the opposite is true. The report presents law enforcement deaths in 2013, and it found that across the entire country, only 76 law enforcement officers, LEOs, were killed in the line of duty incident. 27 of those died as a result of felonious acts, and 49 officers died in accidents, namely automobile accidents. Ironically, 23 of them killed in car accidents, 14 not wearing seatbelts, of course, a violation for which we get routinely ticketed. More officers die from accidents than actual murders on the job. The report also outright admits that intentional murders of cops were down from 2004 and 2009. We won't get into the minutiae of all the details of the report, but we'll include links for you, as always, so you can read more for yourself. But besides direct contradictions to the logic behind institutional myths of heroic cops and dangerous bad guys, what are the implications of this FBI report? First, police are possibly schizophrenic in the belief that they are in danger. This is proven in the recent Ferguson protests and presence of the National Guard. The overzealous militarization of local cops is enough to prove they might as well be hiding under blankies from the American populace, in spite of the fact that violent crime has been dropping for decades. Considering how well cops are armed and how efficiently the justice system protects them from prosecution for their crimes, they still prove to be paranoid. Secondly, militarization is working for the police, and it is not working for the rest of us. James, and it's been sort of amazing to see the mainline populace now over this last year go, hey, wow, the cops, they really got a lot of military equipment. And again, these are the things that us and the alternative media have been putting on the record for the better part of a decade. So, as mentioned, we will include that link. It comes straight from FBI.gov, their report on law enforcement officers killed and assaulted in 2013. James?
Well, it's some interesting statistics, and it makes me think of the statistics that show that you're more likely to die by falling in the bathtub or being stung by a bee than by some dastardly terrorist act. Once again, just the perception of fear of something that could potentially happen to you is enough to drive most people into schizophrenic cases of paranoia where, you know, they have to look under every rock for a potential threat. And the police can also similarly be railroaded into that mentality if they are constantly told about the threat that they face from the public, even if the numbers don't actually bear that out. But I guess my question to you, James, if this is all of the problem and we're seeing the reaction now coming from the public, what is the coming solution?
It seemed for a moment they were going to push the idea of, oh, well, let's just have cameras on all our police officers, which, in a way, I'm all for filming constantly anyone that claims to sort of be our protectors and servers, and we give them essentially the license to kill. But now with the Eric Garner situation, they're like, see, there's a bunch of cameras on that, and that wouldn't stop that situation anyway.
Yeah.
I'm sure what reaction they're exactly going for. Do they want complete chaos? I mean, you see Obama and Holder and all the kind of the poverty pimps and all the folks that love to wave the bloody shirt and exploit all of these events. They seem to want chaos, but exactly for what end, at what point? For them, I don't know how they benefit from all of this chaos, at least the low-level cronies that we see pushing it on television.
Right. Well, I think you might have gestured towards one of those answers, because we are now seeing the public noticing and talking about the militarization of the police, which may be part of the idea. This is the propaganda rollout for the police state, which of course has to be done in a way that will be beneficial, seem to be beneficial for parts of the population. So show all this looting and rioting and chaos. So please protect us, militarized police. You're our only hope. And you know, bingo bango, sugar in the gas tank, there it is. We've got the militarized police here to save us. So I think that might be part of what's going on right now. And as you say, also, I think there's some divide and conquer that's obviously happening here.
You know, James, I just thought of it as we were talking, as we wrap up this segment one. I caught a documentary streaming on Netflix made by Joe Berlinger, who's a fantastic documentarian. It's called Whitey, and it's about James Whitey Bulger, the big Boston gangster. You watch this movie, and not only does it implicate organized crime, but it shows you exactly how a corrupt FBI and their informant systems essentially let Whitey Bulger run and terrorize Boston for decades. I couldn't help but watch it and go, man, if you changed his name for Osama, it would be the same story. So having said that, James, let's now move to our second story. And as we sort of go broad and look at the geopolitical scene, as again, James, just being away from the show here for a few weeks, we see kind of how rapidly moves get made on the grand chessboard. Sometimes they're made in the USA. How the Ukrainian government is giving away citizenships so foreigners can run the country. We find this via Liberty Blitzkrieg, but as the Wall Street Journal reports, Ukraine's parliament appointed a new pro-Western government that includes a U.S.-born finance minister to take on the job of staving off financial collapse, overhauling the shrinking economy, and ending the armed conflict in the country's east. The new cabinet features Finance Minister Natalie Jaresko, the chief executive of a private equity fund, and a former U.S. diplomat, as well as two other non-natives. That's Economy Minister Avaras Abramovicius, perhaps Vicious is in his name, former investment banker from Lithuania, and Health Minister Alexander Kitvashili, who's also a different kind of investment banker from Georgia. Ukraine is dependent on the International Monetary Fund for financing, and officials and analysts say it will need more than the current $17 billion program from the IMF. So, James, shortly before the voting in Kiev, President Poroshenko signed a decree granting Ukrainian citizenship to the three foreign-born candidates. He said the dire economic situation meant Ukraine had to look for people outside the country with experience of dealing with systemic crises. Valery Yoshechevsky, Deputy Prime Minister for Infrastructure and Ecology, said he wanted to privatize state holdings such as the railway and road-building monopolies. And we'll note, this is where Western oligarchs always get paid. It's about looting at the end of the day, whether it's us or them. The looting seems to be the name of the game, right? Some analysts praise the inclusion of outsiders in the government as a way to tap foreign experience, insulate against corruption, and help push through unpopular economic overhauls. But opposition lawmakers slammed the decision. Yuri Boyko, head of the opposition bloc and former energy minister, said, quote, "We don't understand why from 300 coalition members and 40 million people in the country, 10 minister candidates couldn't be found who'd be Ukrainian citizens or at least ethnic Ukrainians." And James, what this ultimately led to was a huge fight. A fight broke out in the Ukraine parliament, I think, once they realized the gig was up and that they were the latest territory of the United Snakes of Captivity. James?
I think that's a good way of putting it. It's a really quite remarkable thing, isn't it, to be granting citizenship to get these people into a cabinet in the newly formed government. And I mean, the optics of this alone are just so atrocious that I can't believe that they attempted to do it. But there you are. So I personally haven't looked into these characters yet, the Natalie Jaresko and the others. So I'm going to call on the open source community out there, you know, dig into these people, find out about their links and their associations and their past and what they're planning to do, because I'm sure there are some juicy details as to why these particular cronies were given the rush towards citizenship for these posts. But yeah, I mean, I think it's quite obvious that what's going on here is that they could have found people from the Ukraine, actual Ukrainian citizens, to fill these posts, but they didn't, because obviously there's some back scratching going on and some outside influence. And surprise, surprise, you know, the government that was created out of outside influence is now actually incorporating that influence into its own fold. So I don't think this should be surprising, but we have to follow up on this and find out more about these people in particular.
So, James, just some of our other geopolitical headlines that we're trying to keep an eye on, and we'll note them here as related to this second story. Iraq uncovers 50,000 fictitious names on the army payroll in major military fraud. Meanwhile, Iran accuses top nuclear watchdog of forging documents on their alleged atomic bomb research. And the U.S. drops terrorism finance sanctions on Yasin al-Qadhi. Who's that? Oh, he's that Saudi P-Tech investor, African embassy bombing financier, and alleged Gladio B agent now let off the hook. James, those are elements you've investigated to a great deal, and I know that's why you wanted to include just briefly this mention of Yasin al-Qadhi.
Yeah, absolutely crazy story, and it connects into the Gladio B story that I just talked about on the podcast, so I hope people will check into that and then check into this story and see what's lining up.
So we will move to our third and final story this week, James, as we'll go to a little bit of good news next week. And we take this from TakePart.com. Yes, organic farming can feed the world. And they begin by noting the author of this article, Anne Lappe, had been at some recent food conferences in Europe. But when you jump down, you realize she's talking about what's making the agribusiness shake in their boots. Organic culture taking off all around the world, especially where it's needed most. About 80% of all organic producers are based in developing countries, with India, Uganda, Mexico, and Tanzania leading the charge. To date, 162 nations are now homes to certified organic farms, and in 2012, the 37.5 million hectares of farmland produced a harvest worth $63.8 billion. Now, while that works out to less than 1% of a global agricultural land, the figure dramatically undercounts the actual amount of land farmed using organic principles, as many farmers are not part of an official certification program. So consider that globally, organic agriculture has received a fraction of the subsidies and 0.4% of the research dollars funneled into chemical farming ventures. The author goes on to say that they would never suggest promoters of industrial agriculture and GMOs have a Machiavellian strategy for global food chain dominance. We'll say that here, but the consolidation of the food chain is alarming. Perhaps that was what was most inspiring about the soaking of the stories in Istanbul, where they were as well. The 981 attendees of the Organic World Congress were the faces of the counterforce, farmers, researchers, advocates at the front lines, pushing back against corporate consolidation and speaking up for a truly sustainable system that can feed the world. So, James, that is a good news next week update, and we'll tie it in by mentioning the recount has actually been triggered here in Oregon, as the Measure 92, the most expensive ballot measure in Oregon history to, you know, find out what's in our food, has gone to a recount as it came within 809 votes, thereby triggering an automatic recount that's 0.05%. And I think the results actually have to be in within about a week, December 12th. So by December 12th, we will know something, and I've even heard whispers and reports and rumors of course, the Monsanto cronies wiggling their way into some of these recount procedures and actually being removed in some places. James?
Interesting. Very interesting. Well, we'll keep our eye on that and report back. But in the meantime, yes, organic agriculture is capable of feeding the world. And it's interesting. They always tout this golden rice and other things that are absolutely essentially necessary to feeding the poor of the world. Whereas they never talk about things like the green super rice, the non-GMO rice that's being worked on right now that promises to do a lot of the same things. And in fact, has even better results than a lot of the GM crops. And also just this past month saw the largest investigation study into safety of GMO food ever, launched by a Russian NGO. Of course, getting very little mainstream press, but it is going on right now. It's a 3-year study, feeding study, that's going to definitively conclude, or more definitively conclude, what we already know, which is that we don't want to be eating this GMO. So, again, it's an important issue. I hope people actually study some of these links and find out more about the issue so that they're better informed about them. Because, again, I think information is power when it comes to stories like these.
So, James, we'll include two other good news stories as related to this third segment. And one we actually talked about this morning on the morning show that I work on here in Oregon. as Happy Valley, that's a small town here in Oregon, their levy to fund the police force failed by one vote, and now it threatens the entire existence of the police department. So we're talking about this story. I can't help but just like, oh no, the police force might go away. I seem to remember a story where you talked about out of Acapulco where the police force went on strike and no one wanted them back. And I think this could be another one of those great situations where were the police to actually go away, you would find life would not only go on, but it would probably go on a lot better. That's not even to pull in super volatile situations like New York and Ferguson. Just take your own town back. So the other good news note, James, Utah bill to shut off water to the NSA moving forward. Now, we'll end on some bad notes and end on the ask that folks give us news tips and use hashtag New World Next Week on Twitter. And that's how we're able to find and sort of open source collect a lot of this kind of info. And we all see it and we can all share it. Flu vaccine death toll rises in Italy. I believe it's over 13 deaths now. Where here in the States, James, it's a shocker, from the CDC, they're warning the flu vaccine this year might not really work because the flu itself has mutated. So that's the same situation we could look at with Roundup and Monsanto. It's like, oh no, you can spray this and it, you know, and it'll work and weeds won't grow, except it keeps growing and mutating, thereby making it useless. And we're kind of backing ourselves into, I think, a bioengineered corner. And the last note I'll make, James, is something that we see going on in the UK. I make brief mentions of it here on the show. But basically, the elite pedophile scandal in the UK keeps growing and keeps building. And we even now have The Guardian newspaper reporting the media has been gagged over their bid to report MP child sex cases. So, James, I will leave it there with all the unbelievable news on New World Next Week.
Unbelievable indeed. Well, I'm looking forward to next week. James, thank you again for three great stories.
Thanks, man. Take care.